You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans? And welcome to the NFL Draft Preview Edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by the good folks at Big Deck Barbecue. And we have one of those good folks here in Zach Willis. Zach, buddy, how are you?
I'm good. It's been a long time since you and I have hopped on a pod together.
Yeah,
so this is weird. Normally, like I was saying, it's like Quinn is on like Instagram when I'm starting Benchwarmer. So like everybody's locked in. This is good to go.
People are actually paying attention to what's going on. It's crazy. Real briefly, we'll hit the news and then introduce. He was going to come on as a guest, but he just wants to be on the whole show. And we super appreciate it.
A guy like famously that could talk for 6 hours if you let him. So, yeah.
Well, we'll let him talk for roughly 45 minutes because I do have other obligations. And we'll talk about those other obligations during this episode as well. Grant Nelson declares for the NBA draft, maintaining his college eligibility, makes no mention of the transfer portal at all in his address. And I think that's selfishly what I want.
Yeah.
Selfishly what I think a lot of Bison fans want. Either go to the NBA or come back. When you're in the NBA, let's not have like Michigan next to your name. It would be nice if the Devil's Lake kid had North Dakota State next to his name. And I think everything that I've heard surrounding that is right now the transfer portal is not an option for him. It's in honestly option A. He thinks their representatives think they think he's getting drafted. I mean, I do think that he has played his last game as a Bison, but I think next year is going to be for the Bulls or the Warriors or whatever.
Bulls would be sick.
Yeah, I don't think that Grant Nelson is going to play at another college.
Yeah. But you don't think he's going to be a Buckeye? Or?
I think the NIL opportunities would be there. There will certainly, as you've seen with Fargo Basketball Academy, as you've seen with NODAC Insurance. Like
somebody's going to take care of him if he comes
NIL
back.
People in Fargo will take care of him too. Maybe not to the degree of some of these guys, but I do think that, you know, being a Bison means something to him. Being a North Dakota native means something to him. And like I said, they're really confident that he's just going to get, like, hey, they have these handshake deals in the NBA where it's like, we want you to come out. So instead of guaranteeing 80% of your salary, we'll guarantee 100% of your salary. And we pick at 46. And we will guarantee you that if you stay in the draft, you will not make it past 46.
Sure.
And so that's, I think, kind of an agreement that I would guess he's trying to make with an NBA team. The second round works a little bit differently there where, like I said, they do get guys that are thinking about entering, maybe not entering, going back to school, whatever. And, you know, Milwaukee will say, Grant, if you're there at 58, we're not taking anybody else and we'll fully guarantee your deal. And so that's...
So that obviously indicates he's fine going in the second round. Like, if the NFL calls, he's interested in pursuing that route.
Yeah.
Or is it like, if it's late second round, I'm coming back to Fargo? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, my thoughts are, like I said, they're very focused on the draft.
Sure.
They're very, very focused.
I think he's right to be. You know, if the opportunity's there, and, you know, you and I have talked about it off pod, but NBA cares more about age than the NFL does. So, like, if you can get in while you are at that age and, you know, your value is highest, why not do it?
I've heard a lot of he needs a year takes or he needs to develop this. And I do agree. I mean, he should shoot better from the outside as an NBA prospect. But, like, he needs a year at Michigan. No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's just going to be 1 year older and 1 year less attractive. These NBA teams want to teach you their way of playing basketball.
Yeah.
Not to see if you can play Michigan's way of playing basketball. Like, they would have wanted, now, it wasn't on their radars yet, but they would have loved 19-year-old Grant.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just not where where the kid's at. Our guy, five, Trey Lance, dropping by NDSU spring date. Good to see him. Obviously, mom and dad were there watching Bryce. He was there. Mm-hmm. Bryce scores a touchdown. Fun for everybody.
Got the shout out from Jalen Waddle.
Got a shout out from Jalen Waddle. And then, you know, had to answer the media throngs here in Fargo. I watched him get accosted and asked about the trade rumors, to which he politely replied, as Trey always does, "I don't know anything."
Yeah.
Polite. Not that he never knows anything, but always polite.
Right. Five. Yeah, that's, you know, I get annoyed when I, like, walk around. They're like, "How's the business?" or "How's Big Daddy?" Like, I can't imagine being the San Francisco 49ers quarterback, like, fielding questions
about potentially getting traded.
Yeah. I mean, like, hey, you're going to have to up and move your life in 2 months. How do you feel about that? Right. Like, no, it's a weird business, but Trey knows how to handle it with class, and he always does. So,
a lot of our conversations, it seems like, about NDSU football over the years have been guys getting into bigger positions, if that makes sense. Enoch moving to linebacker. Jasir moving to linebacker. Linebackers moving to defensive end. Tight ends getting converted to tackle like our next guest. Had a little bit of a reverse of that this spring with a very long, I don't know about large, young man isn't, but safety moving to corner in Reggie King. And then our guy, and I think this makes a lot of sense as a to getting your best 11 on the field, because I think Logan Kopp and Cole Wisniewski are two of your best 11.
Yeah.
But Wiz moving back to his high school position of safety after spending 3 years being built into being big enough to play linebacker.
Right.
Interesting.
That, you know, we talked about run defense a lot last year, and that certainly seems like a chess move to stay in the position that, you know, nobody's gaining 100 yards again this year. You put a guy like him in the secondary, like, I don't see anything going over the top in the run game. But no. What's really going to be exciting, you know, NDSU football put out the clip of him taking that merciful soul from the young man in the spring game, and it's just like, there might be a lot of that. There's a Mike Backer who moves like a safety playing safety.
Yeah.
I really like the move. And Reggie King really excites me. Like, it's been a while since there's been a 6'2", 200-pound corner, like, ready to play at NDSU. And I imagine we'll see a decent amount of him this year.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, if he can do it, he's going to be an all-conference guy. Yeah. Like, that's just how it works. If you are 6'2", 200, and you can move like a corner, you're going to be an amazing corner. And if you can't move like a corner, we'll figure that out real quick, and you'll have to move back to free safety.
Right.
Okay. And then Tony Pierce hit in the portal. That was the other, and you know, kind of his group of buddies, guys that he hung around with, like a Kobe, like a Courtney.
Yeah.
Some of those guys you would always see sort of together, whether it was at a basketball game or
social media.
You know, right, exactly. Hanging out, posting on the gram.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of odd that those guys had hit the portal and he had not yet. Obviously, just needed a little bit more time to make that decision. And so now Tony's in the portal as well.
Yeah. And, you know, if it, obviously, the timing indicates that it would think that he stuck around for spring ball.
To see how the chips fell.
Kind or even just to be a leadership guy, like in that moment for that room. And obviously, the transitions that are happening with the position coaches.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of instability right now that'll obviously be figured out by the fall. But, you know, I think that speaks highly of Tony's character to go all the way through spring ball, which is not easy to do. Like, spring ball is not a fun experience.
Sure.
And then, you know, he's going to test the waters and see where he ends up. Yeah. On that note, let's.
I'm also hitting the portal.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your final destination shows, but you know, obviously, we fielded a lot of questions, especially with like the Benchwarmers stuff about what's going to happen with Bison Report.
Sure.
You had your big press release. You know. So what's up with Ross Uglum?
Sure. I had a chance to kind of do this on the Packers side because we did have a couple Pack-A-Day podcasts. Getting older, having two kids, you know, you and I have had a lot of fun. unnecessary trips to Kansas City, you know, via to USD. Nobody
7 weeks in Phoenix.
That's not right. Yeah, exactly. but those get to be more difficult, you know, as the kids. Not that mine are getting older, 3 and 1, but I've been coaching for the last year at Oak Grove here in Fargo. And made some really good relationships with some parents and was kind of posited to me, like, well, what if you just work here full time?
Yeah.
And so I worked through kind of what that would mean. there's another coaching opportunity at the school that I'm interested in. And eventually it just kind of got to, do you want to keep doing what you're doing and sort of having seven irons in the fire, or do you just maybe want to do this one thing? And so I'm going to do this one thing, and that is do development stuff for Oak Grove. One day a week I'll be substitute teaching. That was a big thing for them. They want more of their coaches on campus, getting to, you know, see kids, interact with kids.
Build the relationships.
Build the relationships, absolutely. So one day a week, a substitute teacher, 4 days a week, trying to raise money for the school, for the kids, for, you know, we're doing some really fun facility stuff at Oak Grove that I'll be a part of, kind of spearheading, and so that's what's going on.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not a goodbye. You'll still be making your appearances. Yep. We'll have you on bench warmers and torture you for 2 hours, but, you know, it's personally, we're really excited for you. Obviously, you get that opportunity and do something else that you're passionate about, moving into golf, and obviously how that sets you up to, you know, you're going to have your green jacket put on you at the end of the end of your career or whatever. So, no, it's exciting, and obviously, you know, Bison Report's going
to
be all right.
And to that end, so unless something very much changes, I will not do the kickoff show again. Yeah. I will not start NDSU's football coverage every Saturday. That was amazing.
You want to sleep on Saturday morning?
Yeah, I appreciate so much the people at Bison 1660 letting us put Bison Report's brand on an hour of no, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
2 hours of radio every Saturday. You know, you were on. We had Quinn on. We had Trevor on. We had Nate. I mean, everybody got to do it.
Recording in the hotel room at the Hard Rock in Sioux Falls.
Absolutely. Sioux City, Iowa. Shouts to Sioux City, Iowa.
Sioux City.
And shouts to that. Very business class establishment in Tucson, Arizona, as well, that we recorded from.
Not shouts to Sioux Falls. That's directly at Trevor Gephardt. So.
But other than that, we're going to announce soon. I was able to find a journalism major with a couple years left. He's going to kind of take on some of the day-to-day stuff, some of the writing stuff, some of the game recap type things.
The Big J stuff.
Yep, he's going to hopefully write a feature article where he interviews a player, kind of your more standard things like that, and like you said, I'll be around. No changes for the bench warmers. I'm not taking away your key to the studio. You and Quinn will be, you know, left to your own devices. You'll be fine.
Yeah, we're just gonna keep messing around for.
By the way, Trey Lance, confirmed bench warmers listener weekly.
Him and Cordell both lying about that. they're both full of it.
All right. Well, because he walked up to me, told me congratulations. And like the second or third thing he asked was to make sure that the bench warmer was going to be okay. I said, "Do you listen?" And he goes, "Every week."
It's so funny that like there's like a 5% of our listener base that is in the NFL.
That's in the
NFL.
So yeah, funny. Exactly. Like 41 people listen to this every week, but 5 of them play in the league.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Speaking of the league.
And 5% of a population being in the NFL.
Right, exactly. Especially people that listen. Speaking of the league, speaking of people that allegedly listen to your show, you guys are probably getting this on a Tuesday, and by, I would guess, Friday night at 10 p.m., this guy will be in the NFL. Hankinson's own Cody Mock. Cody, how are you?
I am great. Happy to be back and seeing you guys again.
Do you claim Hankinson? Do you claim Matador? What's the official stance?
I think it depends on who I'm talking
standing
to.
Standing on a fence, like usual.
I got a Hankinson address, but I'm closer to Matador, and
you
it's
were
smaller.
A pirate,
I'd say Hankinson, though.
No, it's exciting times for you, buddy.
That was actually the first time I've ever seen Cody out in the wild. I was up at Oak Grove watching some of my kids play basketball, and into Gorder Commons walks Cody Mock to watch his Hankinson Pirates. So this is a man with pirate pride over here.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you run into Grant Nelson at all, like any of the club basketball scene or anything? Obviously, he was at Devil's Lake, but...
Never in high school, no. Sure. I mean, I was also a small... We were Class B there, Class A, so didn't really see him too much, and I wasn't a part of any...
And he's 3 years
or...
older than Grant.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, he could have given Grant the treatment he gave me at Quartz Plus when he swatted my turnaround J into the sixth row.
And I want to talk about this when we get to Cody's part of it, but I want to get some spring ball takes, and I'll get them straight from because I've established that you don't know anything about offensive line, so I'm going to ask the future NFL player, Cody.
Sure.
Gray at tackle and Jalen at tackle, which was something that we kind of, I'm not going to say I came up with it, but like, that was a question that I got asked Ants in the fall, kind of got him to smile a little bit, and it just makes sense. He was an all-conference kid at tackle. You have a backup center that is probably a top two or three center in the conference.
Yeah.
In Westy, why wouldn't you play him? Why wouldn't you play Jalen at tackle? But to me, that always meant, well, Mason at right tackle, Jalen at left tackle, Westy at center. Did you think that was a health thing? Are they trying to kind of manage some workload? Why was Mason the backup left tackle and Gray getting the snaps at right when it seems to me like the potential to be thin is interior to me?
Yeah, I would say it's a couple things. Spring ball, you know, is all like just position flex. What can you do? We're going to play you there. Like what happened to Gray last year was playing guard all year, and then all of a sudden Mason goes down, and now Gray's playing tackle in the playoffs. So I think that's a big part of it, and you can't really look at a depth chart in spring ball. We're just literally throwing guys in there.
Sure.
Whoever's available, those five will be out there. There's really no rhyme or reason to what we're doing a lot of times.
Yeah, I think especially guys like Gray who can move all over the place, and Mason is probably more a specific tackle body, but if he's going to just play tackle, you want him to be able to play the other side too. But Gray, I mean, could play all five, and that's what you need out of a guy on a fairly unproven depth chart, the two deeps on the old line. So if somebody goes down, you need to be able to plug him in with Gray and have the next best player.
So the ones were Devin Lockerbie, who we don't know much about, and then a guy that we've been talking about on this show a little bit, Bryce Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You have been foretelling the move for Bryce Friday out of the D-Tech room and into the Ram room for 2 years.
Yeah,
you've been telling me this.
Bryce was a guard the day he stepped on campus.
So explain this to me and explain why Bison fans can maybe be a little bit excited about Bryce and his move to the offensive side of the ball, because, again, like Cody said, maybe it doesn't mean anything. A lot of spring balls throwing stuff at a wall.
Yeah.
But there he was protecting Cam Miller at right guard. So why is that something that we should maybe be interested in?
Well, obviously, I don't want to say this, it hurts to say, but alley cats are known to have a little bit better athleticism than some of us oafs on the interior of the D-line or the interior of the O-line. So, I mean, he was in there for 3 years playing a position that requires a good first step and, you know, athletic knee bend and stuff like that. So he's bringing over some of those tools that are already there. Bryce is a smart kid, and I think he's a hard-nosed guy. One, if you're in the program for that long and you move positions, you're going to scrap to do everything you can to get on the field at your new position. You have a newfound sense of, okay, here's what I'm doing. I look at Quinn. Quinn got moved.
He was a multiple position.
Late in his career. And then Blas came in and said, you want to try left tackle? Here's 5'9", Quinnalo playing left tackle, trying to find his spot. You know what I mean? But I think Bryce is going to bring like something that at least drives some competition in that second group, which I think is big. Because sometimes you can fall into a position where guys know they're the backup left guard or know they're the backup right guard, and they get complacent in practice. A guy like Bryce, I think, lights a fire over there.
For sure, because we kind of talked – we've been talking about Gray as the left guard, right? Because then you would have Jalen, Gray, Westy, seventh year, eighth year, Kubis, can't keep track of it, and then Mason Miller. And you would feel really good about those five, and then you start to have questions about the next five, right? Who are those guys? The Zadichka kid, the transfer from Mizzou, but even, well, we don't know about him. You know, he didn't play a ton at Mizzou. Like, who are those five guys? Do you have any insight onto that? Do you have guys, other than the five I just stated, whether it's interior guys, tackles, guys that, you know, maybe we haven't seen play a ton of football on Saturdays, but just young offensive linemen that there's reason to be excited about in the Ram room?
Yeah, there definitely are. There's a lot of guys who have kind of been in that second, you know, tier, the twos for a little while now, like some of the tackles like Ponch and Rock, who maybe are now drive some competition, be good backups, push for starting spots, who knows. Some of the younger guys, like I think Devin Lockerbie could be a good player. It just, you know, it takes time to figure that stuff out. Yeah.
It's just a grown man's position. It's hard to be good at it.
Young, Nash is a unicorn. Nashes don't walk through the door.
Yeah. No, those guys are, you know, maybe one in a class, one every few classes. So you just have to grow up and like turn into a man while you're playing there. But, you know, that happens one way or another. You're either weeded out or, it's brought out of you by coaching and the other guys around you. Like, if Devin Lockerbie is going to be a guy sooner than people thought, I think that's only a good thing. And whatever reason that comes, you can't really question it.
Wiz. Oh, like we've been talking about him forever.
Your son.
And yeah, But you have, Wirtz and Kubits,
yeah,
who you're excited about as players. Everybody wants to talk about Logan Kopp. I think you have to find, and then they'll miss K's, there's no question about it, but you have to find a place on the field for Kopp.
Yeah.
And then you had the two guys that you tried out, Julian and Oscar, both back as well. It's like, Wiz is going to block somebody that should probably be playing,
mm-hmm,
if he's going to play linebacker.
Right.
My thought was having pass rush. Well, you did not love that
no,
that idea.
Yeah.
They've gone the complete opposite.
So you can give me my flowers right now?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm giving you a little bit of flowers. I thought we could maybe have some Greg Menard stand-up psycho rusher stuff.
You know,
it's fine. Whatever.
A safety blitz from Wiz, from depth, I like.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. You guys, you've blocked him before. You play, he doesn't have tutsy feet, but does he have those kind of feet? Can he play?
He almost
safety.
He almost has a little bit of a Jabril quality to him, where it's slippery, and he's never on the ground. He always finds a way to stay up. And that's a pretty hefty comparison to Jabril, obviously.
Brillo could have played strong safety.
Absolutely,
Brillo would have killed people at strong safety.
Yeah, and now it's just, Wiz is smart enough to do it, and we know that. He's a 35 ACT guy,
yep,
elite 90 winner.
90 coming out the, yep.
It's just going to be that transition period to where, your priority is that there could be a 4-4 guy running past you, Wiz, And then that transition is going to be fun for me to see. But like you said, I want to see Wiz and those other guys, Logan Kopp, and whoever the third backer is, on the field as much as possible. And if Wiz is on there, then, that's a great player sitting on the bench.
Jesus. 6'4", 220.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Does he need to slim down a little or not?
I think that'll come naturally with playing the position.
Sure.
But, if you have 220 pounds coming across the middle, I like that too.
Two kids. And I'm going to add this kid because I just saw him, his name on the thing. You guys don't know anything about him probably because he just got there. Have you seen the Jaden Pickett kid from Milwaukee? So he did what big time college football players do, which is he graduated from college in December. He's here. Whew! That is a friend. He's skinny yet.
Yeah.
Because he's probably 17 years old.
Sure. But, hasn't graduated yet.
Oh my God in heaven. Yeah. That kid has Jabril, and I don't want to put that on him.
Right.
But that's in talking to him during his recruitment, that's what they saw in him was the Jabril Jasir position.
Yeah.
There is just unlimited there. And then your guy.
My guy.
Marcus Gully. I watched him play a little off-ball linebacker, and he fits in now. I thought, he didn't look from just a box score standpoint, what he's listed at. Let's see. 6'2", 227. So that is large. I don't know why I thought that he wouldn't seem enormous, or maybe it's just because he's coming from MSUM.
Sure.
That kid's big.
He's big and long. His pockets are on his knees.
Yes.
And ever since I've known him, he's in my brother's class, 3 years younger, whatever it is. And as a freshman, you're all right, that kid's pretty different. He ends up at MSUM. And what I think gives him an edge, and this is completely anecdotal, but most guys that are transferring are dropping down, right? So they have a newfound purpose. They're ready to go. This kid's coming up, I'm ready to prove that I should have been here.
He just outplayed the NSIC, a Braden Thomas.
Yeah, he's I should have been here from the beginning.
Right.
And I'm excited to see him fit. Obviously you go through summer workouts, and that's where you really get honed into shape. That's where you sharpen stuff up. And then you get into fall camp, we might see Marcus Gully in the first 11.
With my newfound purpose in life, I did not get to as many spring practices as I was like. I would assume you would say the same thing. You probably didn't watch as much spring ball as you might have liked. But the one thing that stuck out to me last year was, boy, when Gindy went down and when Hunter went down and couldn't run the tight end stuff, it was like somebody not named Joe Stuffel has to do something from that position. Somebody. And the guys that I kept looking for were the two transfers, Streit and Carson Williams.
Yeah.
And whether they just couldn't take, because I'm sure at the tight end, because you got to learn F, you got to learn Y, you got to learn H.
Every single position in that room.
You can't just take that information out of the fire hose and go do it.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed. Carson with a deep seam ball from Cam, and then literally ran a flag route into my lap, as people might have seen on social media there. And I thought he was impressive working with the ones a lot. I think he and Strike kind of need to level up a little bit and provide some sort of veteran something behind behind Stoeffel.
Well, yeah, losing guys like Gindy and Hunter, not only like, yeah, great talents, obviously, but how much leadership do you lose in the room now? Like
even Babich leaving early.
Yeah, right? Like that was a really good tight end class. Colin Hunter, you know, mm-hmm. Older guy there. Like, yeah, you got to have people step up to play, but especially for leadership, you need that leadership in the room. You can't just – I don't think you can just have one guy do it.
Especially because that's a room where they hold themselves so accountable, and it comes from the top with Coach Roll. And, you know, I talked to Hunter and other tight end guys. They know what everybody is doing on every single play.
It's crazy.
It's not just – they could tell me who the mic ID is. They could tell me where the queen combo is going. It's so impressive what those guys do. And I think obviously it takes a little time, especially transferring. But the tight end – not only run game, but also in the passing game is so integral to what they do on offense philosophy-wise that it was hard, obviously. It felt like it was stifled. They didn't have that like comfort blanket to fall back into that wasn't Joe Stoeffel. But the hard part is that they're not going to put somebody out there who isn't qualified.
Right.
Like, we're just going to go without it if somebody isn't ready. So hopefully those guys are – ripper on ready to go because it needs to come back this year.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, I think they ended up in way more 11 person than they wanted to because of how highly they thought of the slot guys. You know, Braylon obviously could play their DJ Hart when he was still a part of the program. They had plenty Raja. They had the slots coming out of their ears. They had no tight ends.
Right.
And so that was just a different spot that they were put in. The tailback room was noticeably thin. You know, no Kobe, obviously. No Dom. I was texting the group, found out who that kid was, by the way. Harvey is his last name. He's a walk-on, played high school ball in the Twin Cities. Dino could not remember where.
This kid's going to go to the NFL. Yeah. That's just how these stories start.
Right. So he was in there, obviously, with TK, Tamarick, Barika, and then OJ. But just, you know, they're literally talking about warm bodies in that tailback room just to get through spring ball. Another high school senior just committed, so now there will be two true freshmen in this class, Marty Brown from Creighton Prep, and then a young man whose name is currently escaping me, but from the Chicagoland area, just committed as well. And like I said on Twitter, like, these kids have every chance to play right now because NDSU was so deep that they didn't take a tailback in last year's class, and then three of them transferred.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be the first real opportunity to see the 1-2 punch at running back like we haven't seen in a while. I mean, it's been running back by committee as long as, like, since I got there. But, you know, you even think of Ojeri and Crockett playing together. I was talking to Nash on Saturday after the spring game, and I'm like, do you realize how rare what John Crockett did?
Oh, yeah.
He carried the ball every time.
No, you have to go back to Pat Pashal.
Yeah.
Or Rod Malone, my guy, Hot Rod Malone.
Yeah.
We're 17, the worst tailback number I've ever seen.
That's bad.
But, like, set the carries record at NDSU with 46. And this is, like, post-Veer.
Right.
You know what? Post-triple option. Right. And he still set the carries record.
Yeah, it's not very often that there's just like a feature back, but I like the thought of TK and Tamarick hammering people for four quarters. Yep. Obviously, they can't do that for 15 games. Nobody can.
Right.
So it's just going to be who's going to be that mix in and what is their role going to be? Is it going to be third down stuff? Is it going to be in the pass game? And I think that promotes some pretty cool competition. Yeah, Raja. Bit, yeah.
He could maybe do some of the bussy like stuff.
Yeah, which would be fun. Catch a little flat screen. And good luck trying to tackle him.
Kelly Watson, no relation. Allegedly no relation to Trey and Christian, but any Watson we'll take. That's something that we're very pro here at NDSU. Okay. The other thing that I will say, and don't get mad at me, people in the know, I have heard that they're not done in the portal.
Just out like a bang. Out with the bang.
Not losing kids. I'm not talking about losing kids, but they're I think the obvious ones would be another tailback.
Yeah.
And secondary, just literally people who have, because they've got, I mean, you can't lose a Dom and lose a Courtney and then graduate a Destin and a Tut and a Dawson.
And be like, everything's fine.
Yeah, like, this is great. We're just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, why not? I mean, the system's there for that reason. Get them in before the summer and get them acclimated, ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I like more good football players on the football team. That's always good to me.
For sure. And they have had certainly success, you know, in the secondary from a portal standpoint. I mean,
and in the running back room.
Right, for sure. The OG, before the portal, Brian Shepard.
Yeah.
All they did was close down Omaha's program. there we were with Shep.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have you recuse yourself here for this one. Cody Mox, over under. I was telling him, I deal with these nerds at the KC Draft Guide, one of whom you almost assaulted on a golf course.
It was close.
And
I know Kent's listening right now.
I've listed Cody's over under at 45.5. Where do you like that?
He's going 1-1, so it doesn't matter.
I think he would know if he was going 1-1.
Yeah, he'd be in Kansas City right now.
Yeah.
I think the hard part is with like the runs that go. It goes position-wise. You don't know who's going to fall in the O-line room. Darnell Wright is a guy that has not been mentioned in the first round, but I think he's going to go in the first round. So if that starts a run, people start to panic. Cody Mox picked up a 28.
Tough to think of two more different offensive linemen than Darnell and Cody.
But yeah. I would take before 45.5. You know, and obviously you have – not intel, but an intuition that if you know Cody Mock might be a Packer early in the first.
I will say this: I think there are teams, and I've told Cody this, that have him inside their top 50.
Yeah,
but whether that means they have, you know, because a lot of times teams will only have 18 guys with a first round grade. Just because there are 31 picks this year doesn't mean they have 31 guys with a first round grade on them.
Yeah, and then you run into like we talked about with Cordell, where it's like they tier prospects out, where it's like, we're not going to take him at 38, but if he's there at 47, we're taking him.
Right.
You know, like that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay. And the team fits, basically, we've talked about it, anybody that's running zone, anybody that wants to get their offensive line moving, the Shanahan tree.
I was going to say, go match that hair with the 49ers jersey. That'd look good.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just anybody that's running like your big power teams, like your Baltimores, your Buffaloes, maybe not.
Yeah.
But the teams that will take any super athletic 6'5", 300-pound human and play them somewhere on their offensive line. That's kind of the team fits for him. The next guy that I think is going to go would be my guess would be Hunter. I've set his over-under at 170, which is, I believe, like one of the last picks in the fifth round.
Okay.
That's about where I think, and I was we keep saying talking to Cody, but I was, and said 4 or 5 years ago when everybody wanted to run Peyton Manning, 11 personnel, no huddle, have your quarterback call it at the line, 3 receivers, 1 tight end, 1 back.
Yeah.
That would not have been a great world for Hunter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now that the Shanahan tree is Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay,
mm-hmm.
You're talking about Tennessee runs a variation of it, and you just keep going. Obviously, McVay still runs it in for the Rams.
And then you have McDaniel in Miami. Same thing.
Mike McDaniel in Miami. Exactly. Yeah. You keep, like, as that scheme branches out, that what I call basically the 2016 Falcons scheme, there become more and more opportunities for Hunter, and I think it's going to be a team – like that is going to maybe – because I don't think he's going to be UDFA, but you even get to round 6 and round 7, I think somebody gets to round 5 and just goes, whatever, we want him, so we're going to take him.
What I think helps Hunter's case, too, is he's not just a, like, dent-your-face mask fullback.
Right.
He can slip out and catch the football. I talked to him, and he said people are talking about playing on-the-ball tight end. Like, the value he brings is going to elevate him higher and higher into the draft. And I think he's one of those prospects, like I talk about, where, you know, we have pick 170, and Hunter Lipke is still there. We're taking Hunter Lipke.
And I think what will really help him, too, is I could see Tobe or even Bisaccia or somebody who runs a special teams unit being like, I want him.
Kickoff, punt, everything.
Fullback, tight end. Like, you're talking about, and no disrespect to Hunter, but when you get drafted where he's going to get drafted and they start going from 90 down to 53, your ability to fill two or three roles is huge. It's absolutely huge. And instead of, like you said, if you're a Lorenzo Neal and you're a dent your face mask fullback that doesn't help on teams, I got to think about, can my third tight end come and do the dent the full can my third tight end come and do the dent the face mask stuff 7 times a game,
right?
But also run down on punt and also be my third tight end.
You even look at the big bastard in Baltimore. What's his name? Picard?
Yeah.
I mean, he was really, really good at smashing people's faces, and then they're like, hey, you're on kick return now. You're on punt D. Like, you have to diversify yourself. The days of Lorenzo Neal are gone, I think.
Same over-under for both of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the 10th pick of the second round, 225.5 for Noah and Nash, which I am basically asking you for either an informed opinion, because these are two people that you talk to,
mm-hmm.
or just a guess. Do you think these guys are getting drafted, or do you think these guys are, okay, there's half an hour left in the draft. Now I'm getting calls about undrafted free agent signing bonuses. Because I do think that both, especially after Pro Day, I think both Noah and Nash are, at the very least, guys that are getting calls about immediate, like, we will know where they're going in undrafted free agency within the first 15 minutes of the draft.
Right, yeah. I think it's obviously hard to say with Noah, but I think those injuries are so in the red flag realm for guys that are looking, even in the 7th round, where it's like, okay, we can get somebody that we know will fill the 53rd spot. Let's call Noah after the end of the 7th. If Noah doesn't get hurt and produces the way he would have produced, we're talking about him in the Hunter spot.
Yeah.
Like that kind of over-under. It's unfortunate. But I think you even look at, like, where Babbage fell. You know, UDFA, stuff like that. I think my guess would be Noah will go undrafted just because of all the red flags. Like, injury is number one to NFL teams. Nashie Bear is – I think he's – the pro day really helped him. One, because of the guy in the room with us, all the teams that he brought to Fargo, and, you know, getting to work with him. But you just walk into the room, and you're like, pick out the NFL player. And you're like – there he is. It's 66 from NDSU.
My God. When I saw him, I was like, man, if NFL doesn't work out, like, the WWE should call this.
Yeah,
because he is just a specimen
at that and size. You talk about teams that are, like, those gap-heavy, like, move dudes out of their gaps. Yeah. You talk about Buffalo. My father would not stop celebrating if he's a Buffalo Bill. I think Nash has a chance of going before that mark that you set.
Okay. And then I think Destin got himself a UDFA deal at Pro
He's
Day.
Just too good of an athlete to not. Yeah.
Yep. And Spence, one thing we were talking about before, listen to this. And this is basically only brought down by bench and weight.
Sure.
He is a 9.58 relative athletic score as a D tackle.
Yeah.
And just a 6'8" as an edge. So not a bad athlete, but nothing special. I wonder if a team doesn't look at him as a guy that could help on teams, maybe, mm-hmm. with running a sub 5.40 at that size.
Yeah.
But more importantly, can you play 6 on base downs and then kick inside and play a 4i and get after the passer at that size? And does he have the interior rush juice for someone to at least check it out?
Yeah, my indication, like, just thinking off him coming to Pro Day at 290 indicates that that's what he's heard from the NFL. Is like, can you come set an edge at a 4i? Can we move you to, like, one of those NASCAR packages over the center on third and long, whatever? So a freak athlete. We've known that. Cody, obviously, since he got here, he's a giant human. And him running a 4.78 at 290 is very, very impressive. So same kind of thing with Destin. Obviously, Destin jumped out of the gym and, you know, whatever his RAS ended up to be. But 9.58 is pretty special at the D-tackle spot.
All right. We'll move to the Cody Mark. Jesus.
What's that?
The Cody Mauk?
Yeah.
Is it Mauk or Mock? Can I get that for sure?
It's Mauk.
Mauk, okay. Yeah.
He wouldn't tell you otherwise unless he asked.
Right.
Fair enough.
Too nice.
Okay. The small town thing of it all. You were a Hankinson Pirate. We've already talked about this. And I don't know, maybe an athlete of your caliber, I'm guessing it would have been available to you at West Fargo or Davies or whatever. But the multi-sport athlete aspect, were you 3?
4, 5, sometimes. 5 sometimes.
Goodness gracious. So you obviously played ball in the fall.
Yep.
Hoops in the winter.
Yep.
What did you do in the spring?
Well, we were kind of off and on every year with whether we had a baseball team or not.
Okay.
So if we had baseball, I'd do that.
Okay.
I did golf for a couple of years. You know, I count that just to say I played golf. I'm brutal, but And then I threw in track as well.
Yeah, okay. He came and lost to me in track.
Were you a thrower?
Thrower, yeah.
Okay,
all right. Okay. Cody on hurdles.
The basketball shoes. Yeah.
But honestly, how much does that help? Because I think, you know, parents, and I don't need to get on a – I've been a parent for like 25 minutes, but parents get, I think, so obsessed with like, okay, my son's going to be a basketball player, so he needs to be in basketball camp. He needs to go to Shoot 360 here in Fargo. He needs to be at open gym. We need to get him a ball handling coach. We need to – like – you're already shaking your head.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? How much do you think it led to you kind of being where you are now, where you're like, no, I'm going to play everything?
So much. Because first of all, one of the big things that people maybe don't think about is if you have your kid just do one sport all the time, how burnt out they get. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm a 12-year-old kid and you only have me doing one sport year round. Like, it's got to get pretty annoying. Even if you're better than everyone
just
else.
Just pass setting for 12 years.
Yeah.
Like how boring would that be?
God.
But it also, yeah, just you're such more of a well-rounded athlete, I think. You can just do so much more. You're just, you experience all these different things and these different sports that you play. I think it's absolutely beneficial.
You got me going now.
Go ahead.
This whole thing. Yeah, I mean, like. It just feels like projection from the parents sometimes. Like, I want you. I need you to be this good at this, where you're like, you stuff them in whatever and make them do one sport. And it's like, there's situations where the kid genuinely doesn't like other sports. Sure. Whatever. That's one thing. But, like, the year-round specialized training, I want my kid to have fun playing sports. That's what this is all about at the end of the day. And you know how you make kids fall in love and get good at sports? Is having fun with them. This is why I played football for as long as I did. It's why I stopped playing baseball when I did, because I didn't like it and I wasn't good, didn't love it. But like, if my dad stuffed me at the ball yard for 3 hours a night, I wasn't getting any better because I didn't like what I was doing. Yeah, the whole like multi-sport thing, you know, I wrestled, I did track. All of that showed up and made me a better football player at the end of the day. So if somebody tweet at me, I want to yell at you about
Speaking of fun and Hankinson, I need an explanation on the Napoleon Dynamite situation. how that got to NFL Network in the first place, whose fault that is, or maybe that's something you wanted out there. I'm not 100% sure. How old – I just have so many questions. Like, how old was that movie at the time that you did the dance?
Probably still – 10 years old. I don't know.
Right, that's what I thought.
I was a sixth grader, so that would have been what, 20? I don't even know.
I think Napoleon Dynamite came out my junior year of high school. Maybe 04 or 05.
Old.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, the story with it was my sixth grade teacher will just love the show, just how like dry and dumb the humor was.
Yeah.
He loved it. And for a couple of years, he had been pushing to try to get people to do the dance. And finally, I'm like, I don't care. I'll do it.
Yeah.
So that was when I started.
Of course, you were the one.
By the way.
There you go.
2004.
So, and that would have been probably 2000. Yeah, that's probably 6 years old or so at the time, maybe. And I just,
so this was not a topic, like, this was not a culturally topical thing.
No. And yeah, on how it got leaked, I have no idea how it got leaked. I'm sitting here, I'm running.
It has to be Carter. I think he was tweeting it at everyone. Your brother.
But it's like, I just got done running my 40. I look up at the camera, you know, the big screen, and they're playing my dance. I'm like, what are they doing? What is it?
How did this happen?
And it's not like it's, you can just search like Cody Mout, Napoleon Dynamite. No, you have to search a specific.
Yeah,
now you can. Yeah. You have to search a specific YouTube channel to find it. And I have no idea how it got leaked.
Oh, man.
It's objectively one of the greatest videos ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what was your practice routine getting through there?
Watch the dance every night for 3 months.
Yeah.
And
this is commitment. This is what you're getting.
I was all
NFL
about
teams, this
it.
Is Gritty. What you're getting.
Probably an hour a night, I would just kind of just try to do it. And the problem was when you get to the parts in the movie where the camera pans to the crowd, it's like... Well, now what do? I'm a sixth grader. I don't know how to, like, now what? Like, just make up something. But, I just a lot of training for it.
Oh, man. Okay. So, I think a lot, I don't want to call it lazy, but, like, a lot of the talk, right, with you or Cordell or whatever, oh, kid grew up on a farm, he's a walk-on and this and that. But I do want to address some of when you do come to NDSU as a tight end and they move your position, I think you maybe said it was climbing. I think I've heard this before. You're at some point, I'm sure, getting like, hey, you might actually play. Like, that's probably a big conversation for you because you're thinking, I might be a program kid. And there's nothing wrong with program kids, but you're thinking, okay, maybe I'm going to be a program kid. Now it's like, oh, no, we're going to use you. And then it's, you might be a leaguer. When did that you might be a leaguer conversation kind of happen?
Yeah, I mean, Kleiman was the first one to ever say anything to me. And I hadn't even, I had kind of just moved over to O-line. And that was when I was just like, yeah, he's joking. Like, you know, just trying to push guys, whatever.
Chris is the smartest.
Don't know how he sees it.
That's another, like, whatever. Yeah. But
my one, before I interrupt you, the Cody was still playing tight end. And C. Riles called and he's like, come do a one-on-one. And Cody's like, ha, ha, yeah, I'll do a one-on-one. I'm just joking. And I think you like locked TP up.
You said
like,
someone, yeah.
Guess what, buddy? You're a tackle. Like, I got bad news.
Just thrown that rep.
Yeah, nobody throwing you the ball anymore.
And then I think where it actually maybe set in was, you know, I didn't really have many talks with the coaches about it, but after the spring season in 2020, I kind of mentioned to one of the coaches, I mean, do you think this is like a possibility? Can I do it? And they're like, yeah, like you can just keep on the same track, whatever. But that was kind of the point where it maybe became a little bit of an idea in my head.
I remember vividly like giving you and Gindorf both grief because it was like you two were in an arms race to see who was going to weigh 275 first. And then whoever won got moved to tackle. So I don't know. You can thank Gindy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so I want to ask because positional flexibility, as I mentioned, Zach nearly assaulted a man for suggesting you might play guard at the next level.
I did on a golf course.
That almost seems like maybe that's where it's going. Was it fall of 2021 where you played right tackle and Cordell played left tackle for some reason?
The spring season, 2020. 2021, yeah, 2021 spring.
Okay.
It was, Rado had just left.
Right.
They, you know, Cordell's the best lineman we have. We're going to move him to left tackle. Yeah. I was going to go play right tackle. And then we did, I think, two games at it. And it was after, it was that SIU game where we lost. And we're like, we had a talk, and not that we just had to make major changes because of that loss, but Cordell was so much more comfortable on the right side. I was more comfortable on the left, and it just seemed to work out.
Because you had backed up Rado for a while.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That experience, any other positions that you repped? I know, like, for example, Blazek had Rado play some center in practice because maybe that's something the next level might look at. Have you played guard or center in practice, or is it really some more of that stuff that you're getting to be in, like, all-star games, showing you can do it in, you know, the Senior Bowl, showing that you can do it in the combine setting, or were those positions that you had gotten a chance to at least practice at NDSU?
I got a couple reps at guard, and I would try to push to get some reps, just kind of the same thing with, you know, maybe that's what I'll play at the next level. I want to just see how it goes. So I tried to push for some reps, didn't really get a whole lot of them at guard, and never played center in college ever. The first time I ever actually did that was at the Senior Bowl. And that's guard crazy. Too. I had no idea what I was really doing at guard. I'm just going to jump set everyone and just hope it works.
It did. You know, it was just crazy to see. Well, first, I want to clarify my stance on Cody Mauch playing tackle. It was because I know you can, and I know how tackles get paid. And I was like, I'm going to die on this hill that Cody Mauch is a tackle. And then I see him burying top 100 prospects at guard. I'm like, all right, Cody might be a guard.
Exactly.
Have you heard that much from guys in the NFL? Like, obviously, when they talk about position variability, they usually talk guard to guard, or, you know, one side of the tackle to the other side of the tackle. Have you heard, like, the reason we're so high on you is because you could play across the board all five?
That is a big thing, yeah. It's 32 teams, each team has a different plan for me. There are teams who will play me at, like, literally all five spots throughout the league. Someone wants me on one of the spots, you know. So it's the position flex really helps. But also, yeah, position flex is great if you're a backup guy. But if you want to go and be a starter, like, you want to be good at, like, your one thing. So this is, like, a good, like, foot in the door. And then once you can kind of, you know, get to a team, then you can lock in a, I'm going to be the right guard or whatever. Then you just put all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, and then you kind of you lock into teams like even Green Bay, like with Elgton Jenkins. It's like, we drafted him because if somebody gets hurt, he's our best O-lineman going to play that spot. Yep. Guy played left tackle all the way to right tackle. Or even a guy that went to NDSU, Billy Turner, carved himself a nice career because he could play the four outside of center. But
we had kind of the talk about, like, letting you fail at tackle, and not in a negative way, but just you know, we were talking about even Peter Skoronski at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Guys that don't have the length that, and look, this is coming from a guy who has cheered for and covered a team with a 6'4" left tackle for the last 10 years, and David Bakhtiari. So I understand that not everybody has to be, you know, built like...
It's not a lot of Tyron Smiths walking around.
Right, right. Yeah. Not everybody has to be built like Tyron Smith. Not everybody has to be built like Eric Fisher. Like, right. Guys can just get it done. Has that been a conversation with you where teams are like, we, obviously, it's easier to find a guard than it is to find a tackle. We would like you to see if you can play tackle, and that doesn't work, we'll stick you inside.
Yeah, definitely. There are people who would say, you know, we'd take you, we'll give you all the opportunities in the world to play tackle, and if it doesn't work, you're going to be a good guard. You're going to be a good center, whatever they see. But definitely have chances with the right team to play tackle.
That's called job security, baby.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we talked to Cordell last week on the Benchwarmers, and I kind of asked for like where he thought you'd fill in and what your comp would be. He said Jason Kelsey. He says your best fits at center, and I don't disagree with him. There's the freak shows. There's the top eight D tackles that are like faster than you, and they're scary. But there's no guy that you can't reach on the front side of zone. So I don't know. It's just very exciting to see where you'll fall.
Or no politicking to play next to Cody.
Yeah, right. it's definitely going to be interesting to see where it all shakes out. And but the coolest part is you're hearing from the NFL that no matter where you fall in the five, you're going to be successful. So that's got to be definitely exciting.
Definitely reassuring, yeah.
When Zach and I had you recuse yourself, we talked about team fit. Any teams, and look, if you're not comfortable, you know, if it's confidential or you don't want to betray whatever, like, I don't say what you want to say. I don't want to push you into anything. Any teams that have been kind of aggressive as far as not necessarily recruitment, because they're just going to pick you if they're going to pick you, but any teams that have kept in touch a lot, you've zoomed with position coaches, but they're like, hey, you might be our guy.
Yeah, there are a couple teams, and I think, you know, I don't know exactly how, like, the politics of like the top 30 visits go, like,
sure,
that could mean anything. It could mean you have character issues, it could mean you're one of our guys. So I had a couple of those, so maybe those teams like me a little bit more. You know, I would hope that I don't have a whole lot of character issues
they meet you stuff. And they're like, never mind.
Yeah. So there definitely have been some teams that have kind of stood out a little bit more than others, I guess.
So that goes into like my question that I've always thought about as guys go through this process. You hear about, now they're talking about CJ Stroud falling out of the top 15 because of whatever. They talk about
the S2 score.
They talk about Kalijah Kancey like having all these red flags and can't draft him. He's too small. How exhausting. How much thought do you give? Do you
That's
have
a different conversation, but I can draft him. Anyway.
Do you have like somebody helping you through this? It obviously has to be taxing where everybody's watching every single tiny move that you make.
Yeah, it definitely is a lot. It's been a long process, and you know, it's really only just getting started. It's not like it's going to stop once you get drafted. It's probably going to amplify even more. But I have a lot of good people in my corner, my family and my friends, who you can just talk to them about anything. It doesn't always have to be questions about what's going on. So if it ever gets to be a lot or too much, which it definitely does at times, mm-hmm. you can just kind of go and talk to them about, I'll talk to my dad about farming, just kind of other stuff, just to get your head off it a little bit.
Yeah. So I guess when I was coming out of college, like going into the real world, it was exhausting, like going through job interviews and sending resumes. I can't even think about like, you know, they're watching all your likes on Twitter or like what you're reposting on your Instagram story. I would imagine you've been waiting for this week for a long time, because then you know what you're doing. You know where you're working. It's just put my head down, ready to work.
That's just what's going to be so nice about it is I'm excited wherever it's going to be, wherever I'm going to play. But it's just going to be so nice to know, like, that it's going to take the unknown out of it a little bit. Like, now you know where you're going to go and try to help him.
Do you promise to be like Cordell and actually answer his text messages, or is he going to have to get with your representatives?
No, I think I'll keep my line open.
I'm driving to whatever town you live in. If you say my people, be in touch with your people.
We'll be in touch.
That's what Trey did, by the way.
What about you? Oh, no. Trey was very nice to me on Saturday. I want that to be very clear.
I can say that. Trey's touched my butt a bunch.
Jesus. okay, back on track a little bit here. What about your time? Because you know, 30 teams, 31 teams at Pro Day every year. I mean, it's crazy. There's going to be consecutive years with NDSU, multiple players drafted, because I do believe you and Hunter for sure are both going to get selected. What is it about this place that prepares you for the next level?
The way that we're coached, like they expect a lot out. The coaches expect so much out of us as players. There's times in the summer, you know, we have our captain's practices, and those are run exactly how our normal practices are run. Like, you're just not forced into leadership roles. People just take on leadership roles so early on in their time, and everyone just expects the best out of everyone. I think that you're just always getting pushed. It doesn't matter who you are. For me last year, you got to know there's someone good gunning for your job. Like, yeah. You're never really complacent, which is probably the reason for all our success.
Which is so weird to think about. Like, you talk. I would imagine you have talked to guys, obviously, from other schools in this whole process. But you're like, that's how you guys run your ship. Like, that's how that goes over there. It's so weird to think about that. The formula for success is laid out in front of everybody, and nobody can implement it the way we do because it's just the tradition and how it's supposed to be.
Why do you think the Ram room specifically is the NFL factory that it is? And obviously I think the quarterback room would have something to say about that as well. But it's not every position that continues to just pour guys into the league, and then we're getting guys into the league from different spots. Obviously wide receiver, you know, linebacker with Brillo and Dukes and whatever, but there's always a Ram.
It's gotten to the
draft. It's crazy.
It's gotten to the point where you hear NFL people talk about, like, I like that kid because he's an NDSU lineman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, a big part of it is how competitive we all are in the room. Like, yeah. And to go with that, also how close we are. Like, that helps us play together so well. And we definitely have some pretty good skill position guys making us look good a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But we play so well together. And also, look at the guys who have had success. Like, it's a lot of Midwest guys who are under-recruited that go to NDSU, put the work in. They're project guys. I didn't even sniff the field till I was 3-4 years into it.
Right.
Just putting in the work early on is probably what it's tough to ask a high school kid to go out there and play your freshman year. You can do it. Some of those kids are freaks who go to Alabama, Ohio State, like that. You can do it, but we just do it a different way, where you're on developmental lift for a year, two years, some of us.
Like, three, no big deal. I think what really separates the two that I didn't realize was different until you watch other schools on film, like when I was there, is the emphasis on technique. Like, we're not only going to run our scheme, but we're going to run it how it should look every time, which obviously makes you a more polished a prospect when you're coming out. And normally you hear that about quarterbacks being pro-style offense, ready to jump in. And you see old linemen. They've ran every scheme that's in an NFL playbook. They're ready to go when they get there.
Yeah.
Cody, who is the next Ram to hear his name called?
I'd say Jalen Sundell. I think Jalen's gonna have a good shot.
Yeah.
Whatever they do with him, if he plays tackle, I think tackle would really show how good he is. You know how good of a tackle Jalen is. He's a great center too, wherever he plays, but I think Jalen's probably the next guy.
Okay. Just because of that positional versatility, or he's that nasty too?
He's definitely nasty too. It's kind of been, maybe people don't realize it because he's kind of been a little bit hurt the last couple of years. And he had to move inside, which also pretty crazy of him to just go be an awesome tackle and then get moved in. And he's killing it at center as well. Like, that's pretty tough to do. But no, just how good of a football player he is. Not for him, it's not as much the position flex. It's more just he's a great football player.
All right, talk to us about your draft plans. Because they are public, as Zach pointed out, it's publicly known information. What do you got going on?
Well, we rented out the Hankinson Community Center.
As one does.
Yeah. We just figured, you know, we were thinking we might do something at our shop on the farm. That would be fun, but I kind of want a lot of people to enjoy it.
Do you have like a box of
me.
30 hats, the 32 hats?
They're sending them out, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll have that. I think they're sending an ESPN camera or something out, which will be cool.
Oh, I'm going to be unruly. Yeah. Put me on national TV.
So the draft show in this studio is canceled because we're going to Hankinson?
Yes.
Fair enough.
But, I mean, yeah, I just wanted it to enjoy it with all the people who matter to me, all my friends, family, That's teammates, awesome. Everyone. So, yeah, it might be pretty big. I don't really care. I just want to enjoy it with as many people as I can.
Last bit. Actually, this is the last bit, but last bit on the thing about being a walk-on. What would your advice be to the class of 2023's group of walk-ons? I mean, not only, like, obviously you could rent out the Hankinson Community Center, but like your kind of advice to this year's crew of what can be if you stick it out here.
that's what you have to do is just stick it out. It's going to suck the first couple years, do. Like, until you get, like, really close with your friends, that's when it starts to get easier because you're going through it with your buddies now. Like, it's tough right away when you're kind of on your own, starting to mesh with these people. You have to dive in and make friendships as soon as you can, but also just put your head down and work. Like, you have to be okay with being on developmental lift for a year, maybe a couple more years if that's what it takes. You got to be okay with just putting in the work early on in your career. It's gonna work out in the end. No matter how it works out, if you give to the program, it's going to give back to you.
All right. You have any closing thoughts?
No, it's beautiful. I'm excited to see you go. I'm just going to keep being that guy who buys his friends jerseys. It's been pretty cool tradition. Yeah. So.
All right. Thank you so much to Cody Mock, who was unbelievably generous with his time. Thanks to our friend Zach Willis and his crew at Big Deck Barbecue. But thanks to all of you for listening, not only to this episode, but for me, Babble, for the last 7 years. It has been a treat. We hope you guys enjoy the hell out of this NFL draft, and go Bison.